From Maine Public Radio and mainepublic.org, I'm Carol Bousquet with the news on this day in Maine, Wednesday, June 24th, 2026.
This Day in Maine is made possible in part by Now You're Cooking, celebrating 26 years of selling cookware, kitchen tools, gadgets, and fine wine on historic Front Street in downtown Bath, open 7 days a week.
Maine's law enforcement community turned out in Belfast today to honor Searsmont Assistant Fire Chief Wayne Woodbury. The 76-year-old volunteer died from injuries received while battling a massive fire and explosion at Robin's Lumber in Searsmont last month. Michael Livingston reports.
That's firefighter Tommy Wolf ringing Woodbury's last alarm. Woodbury served for over 60 years and was remembered as a mentor and leader in the small departments that watch over the rural areas of the state. He was remembered as someone who also loved farming and being in nature. He hunted with the family of Andrew Cross, the volunteer firefighter who was killed at the scene of the Robin's Lumber fire. Chief Fire Marshal Sean Essler said the tragedies do not define the work of a firefighter.
What will define us is what we do in the days ahead. How we support those that continue to heal, how we care for the families of the fallen, and how we continue to do the work they loved so much.
The fire at Robin's Lumber triggered a massive emergency response, and several of those injured are still being treated. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Michael Livingston.
Maine's Department of Health and Human Services is resuming MaineCare payments this week that were previously withheld. The department began capping payments to certain providers in mid-May to make up for a $62 million shortfall. The affected providers included critical access and private psychiatric hospitals, as well as hospitals with claims above $50,000. The agency says it can now release payments in anticipation of receiving supplemental funding under the state budget that takes effect July 1st. This was the second year in a row that the department curtailed MaineCare payments. A newly formed coalition of residential care agencies is pushing back on accusations of widespread MaineCare fraud that it says have unfairly targeted all immigrant-run providers. As Ari Snyder reports, group leaders say they want to work with policymakers to ensure compliance with state rules.
The Maine Immigrant Business Coalition, which represents 30 agencies, published a report this week highlighting its members' contribution to the state's behavioral residential care capacity. Coalition President Landry Quisera says since the state suspended MaineCare payments to provider Gateway Community Services late last year, there's been an effort to paint all immigrant-run agencies as fraudulent.
We need to see a way we can shed the lights on the positive side of immigrants and their contribution to Maine.
Quisera says he hopes to work with lawmakers and regulators to address any issues that arise. State and national Republicans have accused Governor Janet Mills of ignoring MaineCare fraud, while her administration says it has increased oversight and scrutiny of providers in recent years. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Ari Snyder.
15 organizations in Maine are receiving grants from AARP to better support older adults. In South Portland, a grant will fund weatherization kits to help lower energy use. In Madison, a grant will support a home safety class to help older adults prevent falls. Nancy Lamond, vice president of AARP, says what sets the community challenge grants apart is the speed in which they're distributed and their direct connection to community needs.
And we know this approach works. Small, targeted investments often lead to something bigger. They spark partnerships, they drive policy change, and reshape public spaces.
AARP is distributing more than $8 million in community challenge grants across the U.S. A federal judge has ruled that the state of Maine is the owner of a historic ship that sunk off the coast of Mount Desert more than a century ago. As Nicola Grisco reports, the shipwreck sparked a years-long debate over who has control of the wreckage.
The Delhi, a two-masted schooner that once carried granite paving stones, sank more than 130 years ago, but it wasn't until 2023 that a Southwest Harbor-based company hired a private diver to investigate and found the wreckage submerged under 120 feet of water. The company JJM LLC has been fighting with the state over the ownership and salvage rights of the wreckage. JJM argued that it has spent time and money researching the Delhi, and that without its services, the ship and its artifacts would not be recovered. But earlier this week, a federal judge ruled that the Delhi is considered abandoned under federal laws and is under state control. The site also is eligible for inclusion in the National Register of Historic Places. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Nicole Ogrisco.
The city of Portland is looking for a partner to help run a nightly winter warming shelter this year. Last year's warming center was open for nearly 40 nights when temperatures and conditions met a certain threshold. Criticism from social service providers and some residents reached a fever pitch last year when the shelter did not open during a late February blizzard. Now the city says the shelter would operate every night from December 1st through April 1st, 2027. Portland officials say the city does not have the staff or a facility to operate a nightly winter warming shelter, so it's looking to nonprofits, faith-based or health organizations, and property owners to come up with ideas. The city also has not secured any funding for a winter shelter, but said it will apply for state grants in the fall. A Lewiston History and Culture Museum is cutting the ribbon on a new expanded home this weekend. The Maine Museum of Innovation, Learning, and Labor has completed a $15 million renovation of a former textile factory downtown. Ari Snyder got a preview of the new space, which is designed to better tell the story of this region.
At the center of the museum's main exhibit room, Betsy Scheintaub with the Maine College of Art and Design is threading a jacquard textile loom the size of a pickup truck.
So it took two people, one person in the back and one person in the front, to get each thread through, and there should be around 2,000 threads on this loom.
Those threads cascade down from a loom head suspended 13 feet in the air, passing through the hulking mass of gears, wooden beams, and metal rolling bars. Museum Director Rachel Ferrante says the new space allows this workhorse of Maine's textile industry to be on full display.
I would say this is likely the star piece in our collection that really never could be a star in the old location.
This machine has long since gone silent, but Ferrante says the museum will pipe in sounds of operational looms to convey an impression of what a functioning mill would have sounded like. The museum's new home is in the Camden Yarns Mill building across from Simard Payne Park on the banks of the Androscoggin. Ferrante says it's the culmination of a years-long effort to relocate the museum from its previous home at another former mill nearby. This space, she says, offers a more streamlined and public-facing experience.
Visitors are able to walk around unassisted, unguided, though we also offer tours. But we also have hands-on learning opportunities, a design lab, a children's center, and a proper classroom.
Ferrante says in its former location, the museum had been welcoming several school or summer camp groups each week during peak times and will now be able to greatly increase that number. At the same time, the new space also includes a permanent exhibition telling the story of one of the darkest chapters in the city's history.
So this is the October 25th room.
A small room on the second floor is dedicated to the October 2023 Lewiston mass shooting.
And the light fixture in the middle of the room is one of the lights that was over a pool table at Schmenge's that has some bullet holes in it on the side.
On a table under the light fixture sits an array of 3D printed pumpkins, replicas of the ones left outside the bar in the bowling alley as impromptu memorials to the victims. Ferrante says she hopes the room will invite visitors to pause and reflect on the tragedy and on the broader impact of violence.
That reflecting back to the community of our history feels like what, you know, we are meant to do.
And the museum draws on its extensive oral history archive to weave that element of reflection through many of the exhibits. For example, Ferrante says while learning how the mills produced common textiles, visitors will see the machines, but also read quotes from people who once operated them.
So really hearing the steps and the process and the work from the workers themselves.
From shoe molds to bedspreads, Ferrante says the museum owes much of its collection to community members who salvaged artifacts from the region's industrial past. She hopes the new expanded space will inspire residents to continue preserving and celebrating local history.
This provides the permanent ability to keep doing that into the future. And so our hope is that people are proud of this place and therefore proud of this city.
The museum ribbon cutting is Saturday morning at 10:30 with free admission all weekend. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Ari Snyder.
And that's today's Maine Stories. For more stories, visit mainepublic.org and join Patty White for Morning Edition starting at 5 a.m. I'm Carol Bousquet. Thanks for listening.